Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey, why? Doom, 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 don't be so sad. Doom, doom, doom.
You're really bad.
NEH.
Remember
to always draw cards and ramp.
And someday
you'll be
better.
How's it going, everybody? You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
You have no idea how long we spent writing those lyrics. I mean, at least 60 seconds.
Yeah, well, it says 4 minutes since we started recording.
Well, so yeah, that's
you're
true.
Just seeing the beginning of it now, but we didn't even cross the finish line.
We got close. How's it? Josh Lee Kwai. Okay, so we're going to talk about the title of the episode is How Do We Fix White in Commander, but that's probably not an entire episode. So what we've decided to do, and the whole reason this topic came to us, is because we got all those questions from everybody for that giveaway we did a couple months ago. And
yeah,
we got, like we said before, we got over 3,000 emails. So we're going to take a bite out of that, only a small one, and answer some of the more interesting questions.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff that's happened recently too. And of course, we can't even get close to starting this topic until we tell you about our sponsors. That's right, cardkingdom.com/commandzone. Make sure you use that affiliate link if you're going to buy any of the cards we talk about today on the show, or like Josh always says, you're going to buy Magic cards anyway. Why not do so from a link that's, one, very easy to use, and two, supports the show that you're watching right now.
And it's from a great company. They're going to get you your stuff faster than anybody else in better condition. And another great company that also supports all of our content is Ultra Pro. If you order those cards from Card Kingdom or anywhere, or just have cards lying around, you want to protect that stuff. You don't want it to get damaged in any way. Eclipse sleeves are the best way to do that. Play them onto a nice playmat so they don't get all dirty and scuffed up. Put them in a very secure deck box, like maybe a satin tower from Ultra Pro. Again, by supporting our sponsors, you really are supporting all of our content.
And the last way to support the show is directly at patreon.com/commandzone. Our patrons just got to watch the last Game Nights episode a day early, and it was awesome. We got to interact with them in our Discord, answer questions about the show, talk about a couple of the rules interactions and all that stuff. And of course, you know, Brandon Sanderson was on that show. It was awesome to be able to share that with everyone early. And we shout out one lucky patron every single week. So this week's episode is dedicated to Matt Wetter.
Matt, you rock. All right, so yeah, we've got a bunch of cool questions we're going to talk about at some point. I don't remember what number it is, how to fix or how we think white could be fixed in EDH. Somebody asked a cool question about, is judging the budget of your deck a good indicator of its power level?
Yeah, we talked about that in one of our episodes recently too.
Yeah, so we've got a bunch of interesting questions from a bunch of people, and it's a great opportunity for us to jump around to a bunch of sort of mini topics. Just want to say before we start, if you have any interesting questions that you would like us to answer on the show, always shoot them our way. You don't have to wait for a contest or anything like that. We're always happy to get them because it does often, a lot of our topic ideas for entire shows come from a question where you're like, oh, that's interesting. Hadn't really thought that would be interesting, and people hadn't thought about tackling that topic. And so that does help us out. That's another way to help out all of our content.
Yeah, just send an email to commandzonecast@gmail.com, and the topic can just be question time.
You can always use the topic question time.
Yeah, that helps us when we're looking for it as well. Just looking up question time will get us all everything.
I also want to say some of these questions may be shortened for brevity, so they're not always direct quotes. All right, let's talk about number one, and this one we got asked from a bunch of people. I guess we never really thought about it, but it's basically, what do you guys think about the lineup of Commander products for 2020? So we did that big announcement video with Gavin where we announced all the cool stuff that's happening next year, and then I guess we were like, yeah, okay, we talked about that, we're done.
We're good, no opinions.
Yeah, and so we never talked about it on the show. So that's a cool question that just totally slipped our minds. And of course, in that video with Gavin, we were sort of in the role of disseminating information to everyone. That was the important part of that. We were trying to make sure that everybody understood what each product was when it was coming out, so that they would understand. And then, of course, we were pushing Wizards to show us cards or art or something like, and trying to ask the questions we thought you would ask that they would be able to answer. There was a lot of back and forth where I was like, can we ask this? And they were like, no, we can't answer that. Okay, can we ask this? No, we can't answer that. Can we ask this? Oh, yeah, we can answer that one. Okay. Anyway, so, but there's been a lot of hullabaloo, I think, in the community, Jimmy, about just the fact that Commander is getting so much focus from Wizards next year. And I think, you know, some people are looking at it positive and negative, as all things in Magic tend to sort of skew in those two directions.
Well, Mark Rosewater recently said on his Tumblr, actually, someone asked him about the popularity of Commander, and he just straight up said that he thinks Commander is probably the most popular format in Magic the Gathering right now. So obviously it's a great time to be a Commander player. We said it a billion times in the episode, but it is true because so much of this new product is coming out next year and there is a lot to go through. So should we just go through it bit by bit, or do you want to talk about overall impressions first?
Yeah, let's talk about it really quick for those that may have missed the announcement video. Just we'll put up the graphic that we used at the end of that video and just go through it. So there's basically 4.5 things that are coming out for Commander. So usually every year we get the Commander product and that's all that Commander gets. Next year there's like 4.5 things. So yep. The Commander product for next year, what would be Commander 2020, is coming out in April instead of August, and it's coming out with the Ikoria set release, which is April 24th, I believe, and they're tying it to the same set release. So you'll be able to test the Commander decks out at the pre-release.
Mm-hmm.
But those are basically the same as the Commander products we've gotten every year. There's 5 decks instead of 4 this year.
Yeah, sort of return back to, I think, the first 3 years of Commander products when they had 5 decks out. And they're all thematically tied to Ikoria, which means that we're going to see a lot of things that are similar to the set, but they're going to share very few reprint slots of what's actually in the main set. There are 71 new cards, I believe.
The most ever.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this in general. I think it's great that we're getting this stuff earlier. It gives us a little bit more time to also, I think, process it throughout the year. Sometimes getting all this stuff at the end of the year and you have this weird break over Christmas break and it seems like not much, you know, we don't get to podcast as much, we don't get to talk about stuff as much, and so the format sort of takes a break for a second almost.
Yeah, and this is, see, for me, this is just like, we would have got this, right? The Commander product was going to come out next year at some point. So they just slid it up. They painted it a little bit on the window dressing as Ikoria. That's totally fine. Seems cool to me. But it's not that different than what we would normally get. It's all the stuff from hereafter that's stuff we wouldn't normally get, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think the only thing that's really differentiating Ikoria is that they have a clear sort of direction to go in terms of the theme.
And to me, that's just making their lives a little bit easier as far as design, right?
Yeah. I expect to still see very, you know, similar power level cards, if not more powerful. It just happens to be tied more to Ikoria. But again, we can't speculate on it because we don't know yet.
But if you think in past years they have chosen a theme and sort of constrained themselves to that, I think it's just too nebulous for, like, do anything.
Yeah.
They're like, let's do tribal this year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pick, okay, this one's morph, this one's flashback. Let's pick a mechanic and build around that. They tend to want to, like, corral the design space a little to make it easier on themselves. And this one is like, let's tie it to Ikoria. So
yeah.
It's really, again, I don't think ultimately that different than Commander products we've gotten in the past. Probably not different at all.
I will say this, though. When I was hanging out with Mark, we filmed a announcement video announcing all the sets for next year. And Mark was telling me about Ikoria behind the scenes. And he said it was one of the most mechanically complex sets he's ever designed, which means great things for me. I love intense mechanics, and hopefully that's going to reflect in the Commander decks as well. So I'm personally looking forward to it. And again, like Josh said, when they're able to help hone what the Commander decks are going towards thematically, I think it makes for a better overall experience for playing those decks out of the box, which is one of my favorite things to do every single year.
So that's Ikoria, that's Commander 20. That's the same product we normally would have got, basically. Now we move on to Zendikar Rising, which is in Q3 of next year. And Zendikar Rising sort of ushers in a new era, if you will, where from now on, besides the core set, you're going to get 2 pre-constructed Commander decks with every set. So,
yep.
But these
not every set necessarily.
With every non-core set.
Yeah.
In the near future. Yeah, they could stop doing this at some point. But
yeah, and if it's like a master set,
right,
you're not going to get decks with that either. So with
Although...
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. So anyway, Zendikar Rising comes with 2 pre-constructed Commander decks, but these are not like the Commander product from the past. They only have 3 new cards each.
Yep, and those are going to be the Commander cards. So the face card and then 2 other inside the deck.
So 3 legendary creatures probably. And these are going to be probably a little bit like lower on the spectrum as far as cost. We're just guessing based on the wording that we've heard when they talk to us. There's no MSRP, obviously. But these are going to be in smaller boxes. They said there's no oversized cards. These are kind of meant for new players to the format. What they really wanted to do was have Commander decks that were always available at any given time, because they've learned that a lot of people are finding Magic through Commander.
And throughout the year, too. Yeah. And like trying to buy even the Commander decks from this year is getting harder.
Yeah, it's only a couple months ago.
Yeah, so this is actually going to sort of split it up. And I think the thing that a lot of people were like, oh my gosh, my wallet, how am I going to afford all this? The main thing to know here is that it's mostly going to be a lot of reprints in these decks, and there's only a few new cards. So I think overall, I'm actually very excited about this, because let's say you're a player that likes Zendikar a lot, and they don't care so much about Ikoria. Maybe you get into Commander around Zendikar because, again, it's sort of similar what's themed to that set.
Yeah, and I think also for established Commander players like us, less likelihood that we kind of internally are calling these set decks.
Yeah.
So there's the Commander product, which is what Ikoria is next year, and this isn't the same as a Commander product. These set decks that are going to come out with every set, they're not for entrenched and franchised players as much. You'll probably just want to buy the singles of the legendary creatures.
And
probably that's it, because how many Cultivates and Kodama's Reaches do you need? If you need those are probably going to be reprinted in some of these decks, that level of card. I would not expect them to put Oracle of Mul'Dai's and stuff in these decks. Although in the Brawl decks, they put Shocklands, so they could do something like that. It'd be great if the value is very high, the reprint value, but I doubt that'll happen for these set decks.
If anything, I think this is more WotC saying, like, we want more players to have chances to get into Commander.
Yeah.
And as someone that likes introducing Commander to people, it's a nice way to be like, hey, I bought a pre-con for you, or hey, this is a great chance for you to start without having to go all the way back and try to find product that may not be available anymore.
And also, it allows them a place to sort of push some legendary creatures that maybe they couldn't put in the standard
version.
So they have some cool idea for a legendary creature, but that's probably maybe too good for standard. Well, we'll put it into the Commander product so Commander players can still use it.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
That reminds me a lot of like cards like, you know how like you played your deck where it was a vampire, had to go to the graveyard?
Right, Alenda.
Alenda. So I think like a card like that, had it been in a set deck, might have actually had a good clause where it didn't need to hit the graveyard.
Reference the command zone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So hopefully, and again, this is all speculation on our part, this might be a chance for them to be like, cool, we can actually make this a 3 or 4 CMC commander instead of having to push it to 6,
because
it's also going to be legal and standard.
Our next product, also in Q3, and it was unclear to us whether, when talking to them, and I'm not sure they even know whether this will come out before or after Zendikar Rising even, so these could be flip-flopped in order, but the next product is Commander Collection Green. So Commander Collection is going to be a new thing that they'll hopefully do at least 5 times so that every color
all
gets
the colors.
Hit. It's kind of like the signature
spellbook.
Yeah. It's 8 cards available in foil versions and non-foil versions depending on your store.
WPN status, with its play network of your store. But both will be available.
But they're all reprints, so 8 reprints of staples that are themed around the color of the thing. So in this case, green. So we showed 2 pieces of art on the announcement video. We'll put them on screen now. We guessed a lot of things. One thing we didn't guess that a lot of people are guessing for the Yisan card, the card featuring Yisan, which Gavin told us is Yisan casting a spell, so it can't be the actual card Yisan.
Right.
A lot of people are speculating Chord of Calling, which is a pretty good guess since he's playing a chord. He's
playing a chord, and things are coming to the surface there. So who knows?
But this is a place they can put maybe something like Oracle of Mul'Dai. I think they could maybe put 1 card of that level in this set.
I would hope so. I mean, that's sort of my main hope with this is, like, there are obviously a ton of green cards that are already budget that you could put in here. Like, you could throw Bane of Progress in there and be like, yeah, that's a classic green commander card.
That's an expensive card now, too.
Is it really?
Yeah, because they haven't reprinted a lot.
Well, it's another chance. I see it as a place to hopefully reprint some good stuff. And, you know, who doesn't like alternate arts and foils and all that stuff? So if you're a collector in that regard, this is also something I think that's tailored more towards you.
And then so that's cool. I think, you know, obviously every color needs one of these to sort of even it out, and I'm a little sad that they started with green because green's already so good.
Yeah,
but I guess a lot of the green cards are expensive, so maybe that's why they started there.
Yeah, and there also could be a chance of, you know, them being like, what we're going to talk about later in the episode, it's like maybe they're going to print a really good white card at some point this year, and then when Commander Collection White comes out, they are inevitably putting it in there. Yeah,
Smothering Tithe is hopefully going in there.
Please.
All right, and then the last set, and this is why we said there's 4.5 things, because this one kind of has 1.5. So the last big announcement, a major one, in the Q4 of next year, so about a year away from now, or maybe possibly more, it's basically Commander Masters. It's called Commander Legends, and this is a draftable Commander set. It will have 20 card booster packs, and He said, Gavin said, there's over 70 legends. The way he said it made it clear that some of those are planeswalkers. A couple of them are planeswalkers.
Yep, and the art that we also showed that a lot of people have guessed the name for, I think.
Yeah, Jessica is what most people are guessing.
I mean, I think we can definitely definitively say it is based on the weapons and all that stuff. But that was a planeswalker art. So yeah, I think that is what Gavin was referencing.
So there's somewhere around 70 new commanders in there. Maybe slightly less if there's like three planeswalkers. Maybe there's 67, but whatever. There's a lot of new legends. And this is a place where they can really do some real reprints.
Yeah, it's a full set, essentially. So you have a lot more slots for both the commons and the uncommons and the rares and the mythics.
Yeah, so that's the hope, I think. Well, first of all, I did get to draft it with Gavin. He referenced that again on the video about a year ago. So who knows what the set looks like in comparison to that. But it is super fun to play based on that. So that part's really cool. You may have seen our Commander Cube episode with Brandon Sanderson of Game Nights that just came out. It honestly feels similar to that when you play Commander Legends, similar to Conspiracy crossed with what we did with Brandon. So,
and drafting that cube was one of the most fun times I've had playing Magic recently. So yeah, that was a blast. I'm really looking forward to this from a limited standpoint. And, you know, fingers crossed again that we have some really good reprints here. That's, I think, really going to determine what the general internet reaction is to a lot of this is what are the quality of the reprints and are there any like really awesome hype like commanders slash cards that may become staples.
I think that'll be a combination of things. The value of the reprints and then how cool are the new cards that they're giving us. What are the new toys? And then I guess the half point at the end is that Commander Legends also gets set decks. It also gets these sort of minimize precons or whatever you want to call them, similar to Zendikar Rising. So they're going to only have three new cards each, three new legendary creatures that aren't in the Commander Legends main set. And the rest of those precons will be reprints. And again, they'll come in a smaller box, similar to the Brawl precons. I would not expect these to be as expensive as the Commander product we know. And again, I wouldn't expect the reprint value to be very high either. But it's an entry point for people to start playing Commander, get a deck going, because this is going to be way later in the year than Ikoria when the Commander product comes out.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are, of course, worried about their wallets and then how it's going to cost them over the year. And I think it's a little overblown because you still have the regular sets coming out, and the Commander Collection Green is akin to like the Jace Spellbooks, which again, you could almost call Commander Collection Blue in a way.
Did you even buy the Jace Spellbooks?
I didn't, because a lot of those cards I didn't want. Yeah, I had them. I wasn't interested in that version of it. The only thing that's going to do for a lot of people is just the collectors, and it may drive a couple of prices down a little bit. Who knows?
Yeah, like if all of a sudden there's some big reprint, let's say they put Oracle of Moldiah in there.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden the regular Oracle of Moldiah may go down in price just because everyone wants that one. And that could help you.
Yeah.
And you need an Oracle.
Yeah. And everything depends on how much is printed and all that stuff. And then the set decks really only bring a few new cards to the table. And if anything, the set decks are more important than bringing the overall price of other cards down.
I wouldn't even count the set decks as pressure on my wallet, really, because I'm not probably going to buy them. I already own almost certainly everything they're going to put in there.
I'll pick up the singles if I'm looking
for
the
new legends.
Or be like, oh, great, now that this X card doesn't cost as much anymore, I'm going to get some copies of it from these set decks. You know, and Card Kingdom is a great place to do that when that happens.
So let me ask you, Jimmy, let's address some of the negativity out there surrounding this. Because, of course, a lot of people are excited. There's a lot of new stuff for Commander. Mm-hmm. It's a great time to be a Commander player, all that. But there's a little bit of a negativity, and I do kind of get it in that
people are
a little apprehensive and worried about, if they focus too much on Commander, too much of a good thing might end up being a bad thing. They can start to, you know, we worry about things like power creep in the format and things like that. What are your feelings about, that topic of discussion?
I would say that every single year when they print precons and they put three new commanders in the deck boxes, out of the, let's say, 12 new commanders that are there, like maybe 3 to 4 of them I think are really viable. And we're changing that number now from 12 to like 20. So maybe we have 6 to 7 more viable commanders in the format. And I think that's actually something that's fine by me, as long as it doesn't, and this is up to, again, R&D and how they design it. If they like go ham and start breaking things left and right and really messing with things, then obviously it's not great. And more cards means that there is statistically a higher chance of that happening. But I also think that it's something that at this point of Wizards designing Commander products, it's not something that's very likely to happen. And if anything, adding a little more diversity to the format, I think as at least a shakeup test for a year is something I believe that is worthy to do. So that's my view on it. I'm trying to be optimistic about it, but it's always a cautious optimism, as most Magic players have about most things. But I'm not going to be outright negative about it, because again, I think people are overblowing how much new stuff is actually coming out, because a lot of it will be reprints with these set decks, and that's going to be sort of the main bulk of like the, these extra things are coming out. Otherwise, you're still getting the regular set decks, And then you're getting Commander Legends, which is going to be interesting. But people were already saying like Masters, the Modern Masters.
Modern Masters was really Commander Masters. Yeah. Battle Bond was really
Prizes,
Commander Masters.
Battle Bond, yeah. So like is one set of Commander Legends really going to change the effect overall over the year? We'll find out.
Yeah, I just think of it in these terms. Would it be better if they focus on Commander or don't?
Mm-hmm.
And I think them focusing on Commander is way better than not at all.
Yeah.
So now we're just haggling over price, how much we think they should focus on it. And is this too much? It probably was too little before. One product per year is probably not enough for the most popular format in Magic.
Correct.
Did we go too far to the other side? Well, we'll have to wait and see on that one. It's possible we have, but it's also possible that this is not far enough or that it's just right. So
yeah.
I'll give them the benefit of the doubt for now. And I'm excited about new stuff. I do like new cards. It's good for us as content creators. There's always something new to talk about. So we are maybe a little biased in that respect. But in general, I'm positive about all this. And yes, there is some apprehension mixed in there. But in general, listen, you saw Gavin on our video. Like,
the guy's a Commander player through
and
through.
He loves Magic. He would never want to harm it in any way. So I do have trust that at the very least their heart's in the right place. That doesn't mean that mistakes aren't made and things like that. But these people like Ethan Fleischer and all the people over there that we interacted with and we know, like they love Commander. They want it to grow and thrive. They're going to do their best to shepherd it in the best way possible.
Yeah, and also Wizards hasn't been like, it's going to be like this every year from now on. Gavin very clearly was like, please tell me what you think. And they're going to take this all into account. So after this year, I'd say let it snow. Let's see what happens with this test year. And let's see, you know, I know for a fact that they're always tweaking and they're always figuring stuff out. Again, they're Magic players too. They want the best value out of what they're making card-wise and what makes most sense, I think.
All right, let's move on because we got a bunch more questions to tackle.
New answers will be a lot less lengthy than that one, that's for sure.
All right, so we're going to go into the official question portion now since that was almost a topic.
Yeah.
All right, so this is from Jan. What's your MO for upgrading decks? Your modus operandi. Do you swap a few cards often, or do you do big changes all in one swoop?
For me, I will take out one or two cards if I really, like, for instance, like
but
a you, card.
But often or not?
Not often.
Yeah.
It's like Panharmonicon needs to get printed for me to do that. otherwise, you know, sometimes I will do this often if I feel like a deck isn't performing. I'll lay it out and look at the curve and all that stuff. And then in that case, I might be like, well, I really do want to put Dockside Extortionist in here, so I'm just going to get rid of this random 8-drop that is a personal favorite of mine, but I've played it enough at this point. I don't need to keep putting it in my deck as a pet card or whatever. Yeah. So that's really the major swaps I'll make, unless I very, very rarely will go, I'm going to change the whole strategy of this deck, in which case you're removing 10 to 20 cards and replacing those.
I mean, I think neither of us are the type of player that's constantly, a new set comes out and we just, what cards going to need to go into what decks and immediately upgrade all of my decks every set that come out. For one, Jimmy and I always have to build a new deck almost always when a new set comes out because of game nights.
Yeah.
And then for two, that's just a lot of work. So I tend to go more in like big patches. So like some point in the year will hit and I'll be like, oh, I haven't upgraded my decks in a while. And I'll go through and be like, oh, Wilderness Reclamation needs to go in these two. And Panharmonica needs to go in these two and blah, blah, blah. And I kind of do like 6 or 7 sets worth of upgrades all at once, and then I don't do it again for maybe a year, you know? Sometimes it's that long, depending, like, maybe I built a new deck in there, and that got some of the new cards, and then that doesn't make me feel like I need to put the new cards into all my decks. And then a lot of my decks, they just feel good as is. Like my Vile Smasher Thrasios, people are always asking me, do you have an updated list? The old list is the updated list. That deck is my favorite deck. Why am I messing with it? I'll just build new decks. Yeah. That deck can just sit where it is.
Yeah, and if you do update it, it's like one card.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely checked out, tapped out, and a lot of people always ask this too. Every single time we talk about or use a deck in the game nights or really talk about it in deck tech, it's always in the show notes. Yep. Always.
All right.
In a previous episode, you called something the nut draw. What does that mean? And a lot of people ask us this question. It's a poker term, right?
Yeah. Have you heard that? The nuts? You got the nuts?
Yeah.
So it's the etymology is that it comes from like the old West in the US. So what would happen is in a card game, if you wanted to bet your horse or your wagon, you'd have to pull the nuts off the wheel and put that into the pot. And no one would ever do that unless they had the best possible hand. so that that term, the nuts, became synonymous with the best possible hand.
Yeah.
So the nut draw is the best possible draw. You have the nuts means you have an unbeatable hand.
Yeah. There's some people also have it akin to like, that's nutty, that's nuts, that's crazy, or that's so good, it's the nuts.
Right.
So it's sort of intertwined with all that stuff now too. I didn't know that about the spoke though. That's great because you can't use your wagon without...
Right. You would never bet it unless you were going to win the hand. So it just became... Yeah. The meaning for the best. All right, next question is, do either of you currently listen to any other commander-centered podcasts? Do you guys see what other podcasters are saying to get ideas for yourself, to improve your own skills, or just to see what others are presenting? And this is from Seraphin.
I listen to the EDH Rec podcast, and I don't listen to podcasts as much. I listen to like two podcasts right now, and they're not commander related at all. I do watch a lot of videos these days because on my personal YouTube page it will show me new stuff all the time. I watched an entire gameplay video in French the other day. I didn't understand a thing, but I was really interested to see how they took on the format and how they wanted to do it and had their camera angles and stuff, and they were also asking me for advice, so I typed out like a long lengthy response to them and let them know. So that's usually how I consume my content online.
Yeah, I watch a lot of videos. I listen to quite a few podcasts, not all Magic podcasts, but well, I'm scared to start naming the Magic ones because then I'll miss somebody and they'll get mad.
Yeah.
But I from time to time, I listen to almost every Commander podcast that's out there once in a while.
Just to pop in and hear what's
up. And I like all these people and they have smart things to say. And just like Seraphin sort of implied, like always looking for ideas out there. There's nothing wrong with that. I hope everybody's doing that with us too. It's like, oh, that's an interesting topic or idea. Or it sparks a thought in you, an opinion. Either sometimes you disagree and you're like, oh, I could talk about that on my podcast. We're always mining for stuff to talk about because we're content creators.
And you and I have both done this, you more recently, but guest on other people's podcasts as well. And, you know, in talk about whatever.
Yep.
I've done interviews. I've also done, you know, Twitch streams with other groups and stuff about Magic and stuff. Magic just happens to sort of circle our lives constantly now.
And other podcasts too that aren't Magic related, I will often get inspiration from as well. So yeah, I always think it's funny because I'll be at the gym and I imagine everybody else is listening to like rock music or hip hop, and I'm listening to like The Age of Napoleon.
Man, that guy was great.
All right, question number 5.
My group has started comparing deck price tags, the cost of the cards, in order to determine the power level. People's rankings just seem too objective. Do you think this is a good solution? What range of price would you consider for each of the common 1 to 10 power levels? And this comes from Cody. This is not a good solution. You can have a deck with like 50 cards that all cost $1,000, but none of them are a card draw ramp.
Yep. So. And like one Underground Sea will totally blow up your budget, but the power of that Underground Sea is not even close to the amount of its cost. So I don't...
A Wrath of God is probably more powerful than an Underground Sea.
Yeah, definitely. Decks, yeah, so. Panharmonicon definitely.
Yeah.
And, but the price is so out of whack. So I don't think price in any way correlates to the 1 to 10 power scale, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think it would have to be a combination, Cody, of price as well as deck building prowess. So if this person is super dedicated to deck building and they have the budget to buy very expensive cards, then yes, their deck is probably very powerful. But
their deck's powerful because it's powerful. I don't think it's necessarily powerful just because of the money they spent on it.
Yeah, the card's power level may be higher because they do cost more. The very, very, very powerful cards like Mana Crypt is the most obvious example. But again, it really depends on how they built the deck more than anything else.
Trust us, from playing with Mitch from Commander's Quarters, who almost all of his decks are $50 or less, and they are totally powerful and totally fine and can hang with all my decks, basically. So,
yeah.
I mean, I have decks with dual lands and stuff in them that are probably $1,000, and Mitch is there with a $50 deck, and there's no feeling during that game that he is in any way disadvantaged. So, I don't think budget has to do with power level exactly. Question 6, how do you select the guests for game nights? How do you meet the people that you have on the show? Have any of them that weren't already friends become friends of yours, and who? This is from Sterling.
Jeez. Well, I will say that we meet a lot of people as a result of our job. I meet just a lot of people in general from traveling a lot, from content creation, from YouTubing and stuff. I would say that the people that we brought on the show that were more of a question mark in the beginning, like Melissa DeTora is a great example, right? Like, we didn't really know her that well, but we knew we really wanted her on the show.
We'd met her a few times, though.
Yeah, but I would say after coming on the show and being able to spend some more time with them and, you know, be in the interview room or just across the table, you definitely foster a much stronger relationship a lot of people, and that is something that I really do cherish.
It's funny because when I read this question, I was like, you know what, the answer to the part about how many that weren't friends became your friends is kind of a lot. Cassius.
Yeah.
Somebody who, like, I'll text. I was just texting with him like a couple days ago about the football game or whatever. Kyle Hill, who we didn't know at all. There's a whole bunch of people.
Mel Lee. Sean Main.
Yeah. A ton that came on the show at one point or another that we didn't know very well or really at all. I mean, you always know them to some extent because you have to email a little bit to get it locked down. That have become like people that are in our playgroup and we play with a lot.
Yeah. It's never happened where it's the opposite, unless it's Craig Blanchett playing Infect. In which case, you know,
he was my friend and now he's not.
Now, you know, and that's why you'll never see him on Game Nights. I'm just kidding. I don't know. The selecting of the guests for Game Nights is a very hard question to answer because there is no rigid process for it. It's very nebulous.
I mean, there's some broad criteria, right? Like, to be honest, some level of notoriety helps, right? If you have 300,000 Twitter followers or whatever, you've got a better chance of getting on Game Nights. But
one of the top selling fantasy authors of all time,
then we find out you play Magic, yes, we're going to try and get you on the show.
Yeah.
But we've had people that have, you know, 2,000 Twitter followers also on the show. If we just think you're cool or you're generally a positive force in the community, then we will probably want to invite you on. And of course, people that have been nice to us and that we like, yes, more likely to come on. Like, we're normal human beings. So,
and the criteria that applies to the people that audition for the show also applies to the people that we would want to bring on.
Yes.
So if you can't talk in front of a camera, then as much of a, maybe you're the best and most fun Commander player ever, but if you can't do the interview segment, then it's hard for us to bring you on the show like Game Nights.
Yeah, that's definitely a really good point. I was going to say
extra turns works for something like that, right?
Because
it's just table banter. But yeah, a big part of the show is that whole section where we're able to explain what's going on in an entertaining and hopefully fun way.
Yeah, so, okay, that's kind of the criteria. There we go.
All right, level 7, question 7. I've noticed in the past few episodes how disappointed you two have been regarding the power level of white cards in recent releases. Mostly me, actually.
I'm there with you.
What do you think would be the most impactful changes or additions to white cards that would increase its power without breaking its role in the color pie? Thank you, Brian, for asking this question.
So this one is the headline of the entire show, Jimmy. How would you fix white in Commander?
Well, we talk about it all the time, and the answer is disappointingly easy, which is just add the two things that make Commander decks work, card draw and ramp.
But how do you do it in white in a way that, like Brian says, doesn't break the color pie? That's the real tough part, right?
I think cards like Weathered Wayfarer are a really good example of how you can do something like this. And I think red has shown a lot of ability to do so recently in ways that still feel very red. So for red, it's always like you get card advantage, but it's temporary.
Right.
Right. How does
cast
white,
it before end of turn.
Yeah. How does white do it in a way? And, you know, I think there are a lot of different ways to approach it that don't directly just break the color pie, if that makes sense. So I think white often has done things where it ties something to lifelink. You gain X life, you get X effect.
Right. But it makes white really narrow if you're not playing a life gain strategy.
It's true.
I mean, Mentor of the Meek is another one that I think is similar to that.
Yeah, and I would love to see more Mentor of the Meek-esque effects. I think that's, I mean, Mentor of the Meek is very powerful, but it's honestly...
It's one card. It's not that high
on the list of things. You know, white always has abilities that give creatures indestructible and you sacrifice them, or, you know, protection from things. I think there is a way to tie that in with white, and I think a way that they can also do it that's clever is making sure that when white does it, it needs to tie to other white cards.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to necessarily be like, you can play, and if now like Smothering Tide, it's such a good white card, you play it in any deck that can play white, pretty much.
It didn't really help mono white a lot. It just helped all decks that have white.
Have white in it, right?
It didn't help white in Boros.
So I'd want to see more cards that were able to play within its own colors or within white's own effects that I think could be more effective to add those two aspects.
I like what you said there, or what you implied there, which is this idea, I think, that like singular powerful white cards are not going to fix the problem. Teferi's Protection and Smothering Tithe are great, but I don't really want them to make a bunch more of that. That's not, I don't think, how you make white better.
Yeah.
White needs a bunch of cards that are roughly equivalent to Kodama's Reach.
Yep.
Right? That's why green is so good. Kodama's Reach and Cultivate are like the most winningest cards, according to our statistics, in Commander. Burnished Heart was a winning card because it just puts more lands on the battlefield. One of my ideas is, why can't we give white the market festival type of aura, enchant a land, make that land tap for more mana? Why does green get mana dorks and put lands into play and enchantments that create mana? I understand green is the sort of king of create mana of any color, so maybe you make an aura enchantment that you know, taps the land when it comes into play, but that land now taps for one white in addition to whatever it taps for, and then you draw a card when it enters the battlefield. So that's basically cultivate, right?
Yeah. I would also look for, you know, they love doing this where they do a land cycle of stuff. Like Hideaway is a way to get card advantage, and every color has access to it. Maybe just make whites not so bad the next time around, if that makes sense. And it,
would it really be that bad if white had one more of those than the other colors too? Like,
yeah, well, it's every single time like Mystic Sanctuary gets printed and everyone's like, what the heck? What does whites do? And you're like, oh gosh. It
puts a 1/1 counter on something, you know?
It's like, yeah, that's nice, but it certainly isn't as game-breaking as the blue one, which already historically has had a lot of really good cards to do, you know, great things. So, yeah, I think white just needs to get a little more love.
I mean, but I do think it's the tough. Love, it needs to be the right kind of love. I think the point of, like, give us those mid-tier cards, not the super powerful Smothering Tithe, Teferi's Protection. They've got good cards at the top end. Swords to Plowshares, Path of Exile, Enlightened Tutor, Sun Titans. There's some great white cards. The problem is it falls off really hard after like their top six or seven cards. They're 8th most powerful through their 20th most powerful cards are just bad compared to everybody else's.
Yeah, if you're fielding a baseball team, you can't just put, you know, 20 Sammy Sosas on there.
Right.
You have to have a team that can hit and then also play defense on the other end of it. So you need a more well-balanced squad. So I definitely agree with that.
Okay, before we continue, let's take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angi.com.
And we're back. Let's continue the discussion. Question number 8.
This is a fun one.
Why are you so focused on continually upping the production value of the show? Animations are cool and all, but I'm sure most people would rather have more content, even if it is a lower production value. I won't say the name, actually, because we get this a lot. So this is not, it's not fair to put this on this one person.
Yeah, I will start by saying this. If we were at a point in Magic the Gathering content history where we're the only people making content, then there is more merit to this argument.
Yeah.
However,
but we're not.
There's so much. People are like, I want more Commander gameplay. It's like, just Google it. It's
there's so much.
Everywhere. It's so much, and everyone's doing it, and it's really awesome to see.
Yeah. Playing with power, spike feeders, MTG Mudsta, Commander Versus, Commander Clash. There are tons. I'm sorry for everybody that I missed there.
There's streaming ones as well. There's tons and tons and tons now.
Yeah. So I think it doesn't really make sense for us to try and put out more stuff because we're never going to be in that scrum with everybody else that's creating a ton of stuff. Like, there's... What are we adding to that conversation exactly? Just putting out more stuff that's not got the animations and everything. For us, that's the thing we're bringing that's new. That's what we have that nobody else has. So
it's also what we want to do.
Yeah,
I don't know how if I can express that bluntly enough. It's what we want to do, so that's what we're going to do. We're not bound by a studio. We're not, I mean, like, if the view count suddenly dropped to zero because the animations were so offensive, that then yes, obviously, you know, like,
we always say, something,
we always say vote with your wallet and you vote with your views as well. But the views are certainly not like dying because of the extra production value we're adding. And we're keeping to the same consistent schedule that we've had pretty much since day one. So
I also think a lot of people, they say this idea that I think is incorrect, which is like the animations are cool and all, but
yeah,
here's the thing. The animations for a lot of people are what make game nights watchable over content that doesn't have it. Because if you don't understand the game's nuances super, super well, the animations really do help you keep up with what's going on in a way that allows people to watch gameplay that couldn't otherwise watch it.
Yeah.
Don't underestimate the power of the animations to convey what's going on in the game in a way that explanations and words never could.
And also just like general excitement level too. I love seeing the animations come up, and I know for sure, for a fact, that this show reaches a lot of really like a younger audience as well. And like, they're not going to understand the complexities of the massive stack that's being built up, but they love getting excited because
a fireball shoots from this card and hits that card, they know exactly what happened.
Yeah, exactly. And it's fun to watch. And I think for that too, like, we're always trying to bring more people into the game. And I can't tell you how many people, again, I cannot stress how many people are like, because of game nights, my son is really interested in Magic because he wants to, you know, play the game and have it feel like that too.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of that.
I do really like what you said too, because we want to. Don't underestimate the reason that your favorite content creators, no matter who they are, create this stuff is because they want something cool that they created at the end of it.
Yeah. So it's your reel, right? It's going to live forever on the internet.
You're going to work your butt off to get it done too. And so you're not going to do that if you're not going to be proud of it, or it doesn't wind your clock to do it. And for us, making stuff that's like cool at the end of it is really what gives us the energy to actually do it in the first place.
Yeah.
So,
and you're the one that's in the trenches doing all of it. So I'm never going to go in and be like, Josh, you know what? I think we should do less of what you want and more what the internet wants.
Well, let's do more low quality stuff, quote unquote, low card, less production
less
value.
Less production value. Yeah.
Which is just not going to be, I think, ever our game. It's just not how we're going
to
do it.
And to answer this question even more so, the Kickstarter that we ran recently and the reason that we need patrons and all the support is so that we can continue to do this stuff and now put out more content. Like, we're going to release extra turns episodes next year because we're able to raise that bar and fundraise for it as well.
So, live streaming maybe of some Commander games. So we are looking to be able to do some ancillary content in addition, but we're never going to lower the bar of production value on game nights.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe it's like we're speaking too highly of ourselves, but if I was a professional athlete and you told me, like, Jimmy, like, you're trying to make it to the Olympics, well, why not just not do that and try and race more and not push yourself as hard?
Yeah.
It's like, well, I mean, I want to achieve something at the end of the day, so this is what we're pushing ourselves towards.
Yes, we're Olympic athletes now.
You are, with those arms, that's for sure.
You've been working out harder than me lately.
Yeah.
Okay, question number 9. What do you guys think about playing with an ante? This is from Toby. Did you ever play with an ante back in the day?
I didn't, because it was terrifying.
Scariest
and I one, only yeah. had like 50 cards, yeah. So I'm certainly not going to be anteing any of them up. This is my whole deck. Yeah. You're not going to take a lightning bolt from me. I will play for silly things occasionally. Like, one time we had Mishra's coupon, I think it was an uncard. You can tap it and sag it to make someone go get you a drink. So that was our ante. It just was at the table and was just like, at any time, if you attack me, I'm going to tap this and make you, you know, get me a drink. So I've done that before. Like, hey, if you win this game, you're buying me dinner or whatever. Like,
right.
that's the sort of thing I think friends can do on a fun basis. But
I've heard of leagues. I've never done one of these where you start with like a sealed deck or a certain amount of packs or something.
Oh, cool.
And then you play for ante in the league. And so the person who wins can kind of start to snowball depending. Ante, if you don't know, in the original days of Magic, there it was designed this way. There was a bunch of cards that referred to ante. What you're supposed to do is shuffle your deck, present it to your opponent, and then before you draw your hand of seven, you would flip the top card and put it off to the side, and that was your ante, which meant whoever won the game was going to win that card from the other player.
Man, back in the day, that could have been like a Mox.
Yeah.
I mean, it could have been anything.
It just shows that they did not understand when they started the game that the cards would even have value. They thought they would just be worth like Monopoly game pieces. Like, does anybody want to go to a store and buy the little dog or the top hat from Monopoly? No, that's how they thought of it. Turned out that, yeah, Black Lotuses and stuff became so valuable that it was too dangerous and people just wouldn't play for ante, and then they eventually phased that out of the game. I did play for ante a little when I was a kid, and yeah, it felt horrible. I mean, but it felt awesome too, because you got the rush
when you did win. Yeah, the rush.
But it felt bad when you lost, and if you lost like one of your good cards,
ugh.
If that happened to you once, you were never playing for ante again. Yeah, basically, you're
just go play Pogs if you want to take people's things.
But I think in a league, like in a self-contained league where we're going to buy these 8 packs or these 10 packs, we're going to build decks, we're going to play a rough Swiss tournament structure over a couple of weeks or months, and we're going to play for ante just within that little environment, that could be fun.
I've seen drafts where at the end of it, everyone puts all the rares and mythics in the middle of the table, and then whoever wins the draft gets first pick.
Yeah,
and
we've done that.
You do that draft as that. So that's
similar.
Similar, yeah.
All right.
Question number 10. I never win games. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I listen to all your podcasts. I spend a lot of time tuning my decks, and I think they're good. And it's not like I'm always in last place. I get second a lot, but I can never seem to be the winner in the end. Any advice? And this comes from Chandler. It is hard to win games and close out sometimes because people often do the thing where it's like, I see my chance, this is it. And then they go all out, they give 100% and they play all their cards. But it just gets them to the point where they empty themselves out, and the person that sandbagged a little bit harder is able to take the victory from them as well.
Chandler, I think my advice would be, you're probably doing what most of us do, and I think almost everybody falls into this pitfall, which is concentrating too much on the deck building portion and not enough on the playing of the game portion.
Mm-hmm.
I think unequivocally, the place that almost everybody can improve the most is in playing the actual game.
Yeah. It's what differentiates a pro player and not a pro player. It's how you, like, because they don't get to politic. It's
right.
Just about how well they play the game.
And politics could be part of this mix because we're playing Commander. Maybe you could play around with your politics and improve that skill set. But I think also just your sequencing, the decisions that you're actually making, the threats you're choosing to remove, when you're choosing to remove them.
What you're tutoring for.
Who you're attacking and why, when you're playing defensive. Not, there are so many decisions in the game. And I know for a fact that people don't pay enough attention to this really important aspect of, you know, Commander, because when we do an episode like the Brawl episode and a bunch of people come out of the woodwork and be like, why? I don't want to watch Brawl. I want to watch Commander. You had a chance to watch Reed Duke play multiplayer Magic and break down his thought process for it, and you don't think that's valuable. That tells me that you're putting way too much stock in what the cards are that are in the deck and not enough stock in the mind and the mental process of the sequence of actions that you're taking and why.
Yeah.
And so, Chandler, I think that's probably, and for myself, you know, I've noticed a huge improvement in my gameplay ever since we started doing game nights, because I'm forced, I say this all the time, but I'm forced to analyze not just my play, but everyone's play for hours on end, weeks on end. And I think that's made me a way better player than I used to be. And I think that if you just think about your games in terms of not what's in your deck, but what decisions were made and were those correct,
yeah,
that's probably where you can find a lot of improvement. I bet we'll push you over the top so you're not in second place anymore. You're in first place sometimes.
Yeah, I would definitely just say focus on one thing at first and try your best to improve that. And I think sequencing, what you mentioned, is one of the most important things. Like turn three, you might have three options. Figure out which is the best and why. And a lot of ways you can do this too is by playing more limited, where those first few turns are really crucial in how you use your mana. And
watching also, the players that do win in your pot a lot, noticing the patterns of what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, they're probably playing their ramp before their other cards. Are you doing similar things like that? You know,
yeah.
That kind of thing will help you.
Yeah. Having good discipline in gameplay will make a big, big difference too.
All right, question 11. My question is concerning real-life interaction like at Magic Fest and GPs. How do you guys feel about fans coming up to you? Do you feel bothered by it? Maybe not bothered at first, but eventually fed up? From Richard.
Richard, if you came up and say hi to me, I wouldn't be bothered.
We'll never be bothered. We won't be at the event if we don't want that to happen.
Yeah.
It's very easy for us to not walk in the doors of an event.
Yeah, and like I think the number one thing that, because I've done conventions.
You've done this
now.
Longer than me.
I've done YouTubing and stuff as well.
You have big cons and stuff.
There's all sorts of different people that will come up to you and say hi. And, you know, it's not in my interest to be rude to anyone. But if I do, for instance, have someplace I need to be, or I have a draft I signed up for, I will do my best to get to that event. And I think the only time that I think if you're worried about it, right, if you're like, oh, I see so-and-so here, I don't know if I should approach them or not, is just take a second to gauge if they're busy or not, if they're headed to something, if they look like they're in a rush. And if they are, maybe choose a better time to do it so you don't have that pressure on you. Because for us, even if we're rushing to something, if I'm going to something, I'll be like, hey, I can talk to you, but you have to walk with me.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that I can easily do, but I don't want the other person to feel like, oh, I was bothering them X, Y, and Z. So I think it's easier for the person that wants to communicate or interact with them to just gauge that first. And that will give you, I think, just much better results if you're worried about that in general. But please don't be worried.
Yeah.
You guys are the reasons that we're here and the reasons that we're at the event and doing the things that we do.
Yeah, we love interacting with everybody out there that watches our content, and we like playing games with everybody. That is why we're at the event. So don't be shy about coming up. But yeah, if you see one of us walking and we're just pointed straight at the bathroom, maybe just wait a second. We'll probably be coming out eventually.
Yeah, you know? I hope so. Jeez.
You don't have to wait outside the bathroom door either.
Yeah, don't do that either.
But like, yeah, I'm just saying, like, every once in a while you're like, oh, I gotta go to the bathroom, I'll be right back, you know?
Yeah.
But we've also learned it's okay to just, we'll tell people when that's the case too. I learned this from you, but it took me a little while to get used to it. It's like, I'm on my way to lunch, so I'll catch you later, but I have to go.
Or I'll be at X, Y, and Z. I have a meetup at this time and you can find me there. I think that helps for a lot of people as well. I think the last thing I would say is, the only time that I ever get irked or bothered is when a question crosses a line, if that makes sense.
Like, don't attack us with your questions.
Don't attack us with your questions, that's for sure. I have gotten some people to come up that just were frankly a little rude and asked, why, you know, similar to like the, I want this, why don't you do this kind of thing? And I'm going to do my best to handle it gracefully. But I think in general, you know, I'm at a magic event to talk about magic stuff. Please don't ask me about my personal life, you know? And those are the things too, where I'm not going to be like, don't do that. I'll just be like, let's move on to another topic or whatever. But I think those are the sort of other small things just to be wary of.
In general, like 99.9% of people are awesome.
Everyone is so nice and awesome. Yeah, don't fret it. Don't worry about it. So please say hi to us if you want. And never be worried. If you want a signature too, this is the best thing. Please bring a pen, because I may not have one.
I try, but sometimes I lose them because people just walk off. Yeah. Also, I want to give this spiel because it makes me feel bad. I will sign your Vidalcan Ori if you ask me to, but every time pen hits cardboard when I do that, I feel like just like a $20 bill just evaporated from the universe.
Yeah.
So
it is nice to sign the sleeves.
Much rather sign like a command tower or a soul ring. Yeah. You know? So I'm just putting that out there. If you really want me to sign the Ori, I will do it, but
hot tip,
it hurts me.
If you want Josh to sign every card in your collection, have him sign an inner sleeve, and then that way it can go on any of them. Yeah, exactly. Right. Also, don't be afraid to ask for photos.
Oh yeah, not at all.
We're totally good with that.
Okay. Number 12.
How do you guys feel about people eating or drinking while you're playing? If it's like a drink with a straw that is off to the side and they know where they're putting it, I'm okay, but I need to know the person that's doing it and just trust them in general.
In general, I don't like any drink that doesn't have like a cap that screws on on a table where I'm playing. I'll literally ask people, hey, can you put that on the table behind us?
Yeah,
I don't like that. Food is a little bit more nebulous. It depends on the food, depends on where it is. Like,
well, also a lot of times, very rare, unless the person is aggressively taking your cards and handling them, you can kind of do what you want on your side of the table, but I don't want like crumbs flying everywhere and stuff too. So in general, I would say like there are plenty of times, let's say you pass the turn, lean back, eat your food, do whatever you need, take a bite, wipe your hands off. Just try and be respectful, I think, of other people and their cards as well, because it's not just your value on the table.
It's a lot harder for food to damage my cards than a drink, but it is possible.
But I don't want grease everywhere either. That's oil and stuff that's really rough and hard to clean.
All right, number 13. Do you think that some cards are played in too many decks? I've found that many decks of certain colors have many auto-include cards that make games predictable and a little dull. This is from Nikolai.
Yes.
I see.
There's my answer. I mean, yeah.
You think we're getting more homogenized?
I think if you're playing green, sure. I think like it's so easy just to always play a Cultivate Kodama's Reach and the ramp package.
Vegetation, Sky Scroud, Clam, yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing that I really do have issue with is just that we have too many cards like Mana Crypt and Mana Vault, and they cost way too much, and they're way too powerful, and
you
way
want
too
them
good.
In all
and
the
you
decks.
Want them in every single deck, and it's
just
not
possible.
Yeah,
you don't have to play them all.
I know you don't, and there's obviously a lot of ways around them, but let's say you want to make them on a white deck, and you want it to work with the ramp, or your Voltron deck, and all that stuff we've talked about. So I think that's the only time where I'm like, ugh, bummer, I have to make sure I get X, Y, and Z in this deck, and it's going to cost a pretty penny.
I mean, you don't have Mana Crypt in every one of your decks, right?
No.
So,
but I would like to.
Yeah, but I mean, so you're fine playing decks that don't have it.
Right? Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
it's like you have...
I just live with it. I have a powerful deck, and I have this one.
And, well...
And it can still be powerful.
I have a couple powerful decks that don't have those cards.
Yeah, I mean, I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that I buy into the idea that it is inherently better if every deck just has all unique cards and none of them overlap.
Right.
Like, and it also isn't realistic.
It's not realistic.
Yeah.
And the power level is going to be all over the place in that case.
Yeah, I think there is a little bit of format homogenization going on, and that's just inevitable as the game continues to go, because they're putting out new cards constantly, and they're just going to put out cards that are like, yep, that's going to go in a lot of decks. I don't think they could design Magic cards every single year and have them come out every 4 months and that not happen on some level. But in general, the format diversity in Commander is very, very, very high.
It's insane. Think about all the cards that never would have seen play otherwise, but now because of Commander, they are realistic and very good, or just played in these niche decks or these strategies. Like,
yeah, and every year they come out with a Commander or two or three or four where all of a sudden a bunch of cards that nobody ever played now are going to get played. Feather did that, and Kadena does that, and all kinds of cards. Grevin did that. And so they're actually often pulling in a bunch of cards that just weren't seeing play and bringing those into the format. And yes, sometimes they're also doing the thing, and by them I mean WotC, where they're making, you know, a card that, like, well, that's going to go in most green decks, but
like a Teferi's Protection level card kind of thing.
I kind of think those two things balance out in a lot of ways, and I actually think format diversity is pretty good, so I don't think this is a huge problem, honestly.
It's only going to get better next year, because the number one thing we're getting more of is commanders.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, question 14. First, if Commander is a casual format, why use politics? If it's not a tournament, why go so far to win and not just enjoy the game? Second, if I want my playgroup to minimize politicking, which I think is a real question, how can I go about it? This is from David.
It's a funny question because clearly David doesn't like politics.
Yeah, Commander is a casual format, and that's why politicking exists.
Yeah.
Because in a non-casual format, you wouldn't be able to talk to your opponent and be like, could you not do that?
Yeah, no, there's prizes. I'm killing you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting that David equates politics to trying harder, which is politics actually are one of the biggest casual aspects of the format. That's one of the things I think that makes it casual, is the ability to be like, come on,
don't do that. Yeah. I think if the politics in your group are becoming toxic, which maybe it is, which is just like, if you don't do this, I'm not talking to you again. If you don't do this, it's over. Yeah, like
that's not politics exactly.
Yeah, that's like threats, right? That's like
that would be bad in any game, right?
Like, yeah, it's more barbaric, I guess, in a lot of ways too. It's just very much like X then Y. I think like what Josh just did, the come on, like try and add a little more fun and levity into your situation, and I think that might help the politicking. And something else that Josh says all the time that I think is great, which is just like, you got to do what you got to do. And the politics are over, just do it. Because I don't want to wait around and keep going and going. And I think like there are ways that you can contribute to the table atmosphere that help take away from maybe what you find negative or unsavory about it.
Yeah, and I can see politics getting out of control, even if they're not toxic, to the point where like, and I think we've been on the forefront of spearheading this idea that look, in game nights, look how fun politics can be. And a lot of people come up to me and say, our playgroup wasn't political at all. We watch game nights and now it's way more fun because we're always like throwing out crazy deals and stuff. Thanks for teaching us that was a thing about the format. But that can go too far too. That can, there can be too much of that.
Yeah, and everything's a deal all of a sudden.
Yeah, it's like, okay, at some point we got to play cards and attack people and get towards the end of this game. So that could be annoying too. So if you're on that side of it, David, I would say, you know, just talk to people and you can do it. It'd be like, come on guys, there's like way so much talking. We're only getting one game a night, if that's the reason. If you just don't like politics because you don't like the social interaction between people, I mean, it's possible that Commander's not the correct format for you, because that's one of the things that makes Commander what it is. It's really about the gathering and the social aspect. If you want just streamlined, I'm not going to talk to my opponent, I'm just going to try and kill them, then, you know, standard, modern, limited 1v1 formats are really better at that than Commander is, I think.
Yeah. And also as a thought experiment for you, David, I would, for instance, take a pen and paper and just write out all the reasons why you don't like politicking and sort of look at them all and see if there's a common thread there. And that might be the actual sort of the pain point. And if you can address that, I assure you that everything stemming from that is going to be a lot, lot easier. So try and figure out what that is, because it does seem like it is something more deeper than what the question poses that may be the actual problem here. And it's good to always know about yourself as well.
All right. This is the last question. It's question number 15. And we're bringing it full circle to the very start of the
episode. Full circle.
Amy asks, how long does it take to perfect the intro songs? approximately 4 minutes, Amy.
Okay, you're ready to recreate the beginning of every episode? All right. So I'm usually off camera.
Okay, here's how it goes.
I hit roll.
And here's me. I'm going, oh, crap, we need a song. It's like the start of every episode, I realize we need a song just at the point where he hits record.
And then I sit here and we're like...
And then here's what I Googled today. Top songs.
Top songs?
Yeah.
You just...
And I'm just going down the Billboard 100 chart and I'm like, well, do I want to sing Billie Eilish? Not really.
No.
And then I'm... And then it's like, oh, what's the episode about? It's about, oh, fixing White.
White, okay.
So I typed songs White. And then the White album came up. So we were like,
okay, Beatles.
The Beatles.
Okay,
all right, what are some songs by the Beatles?
And then we literally went through three of them. We're like, Blackbird Singing, the Dead of Night. And then we're like,
back in the USSR.
I'm like, that's not right.
And then we're like, okay, forget the White album. What other Beatles songs are there?
Yeah, and we're like, the worst part is, this is the worst part. When we look at the song, I'm like, we can do that. I was like, no, we've definitely done that one before. It's like, crap.
Yeah.
All right, back to the drawing board.
That's what we're running into now after almost 300 episodes.
Yeah.
Is that
a lot of repeats?
Yeah. We've actually repeated some songs not knowing it, where the Discord server will be like, you guys already did that one. You already did that one twice.
No way.
They said that about the Ozzy Osbourne going off the rails on a crazy train.
Yeah. We've never done that.
I have no idea we'd done that at some point in the past. Like,
jeez.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good song.
So there you go, Amy. It takes approximately forever.
4 to 5 minutes of just like us going like, ah! And then like another 2 minutes to start prepping it sometimes. In this case, we like rewrote the lyrics because it was about a question and we were like, this is a smart idea.
Sometimes we're very smart.
Yeah.
All right. To the listeners, we got a question for you all. We just answered a bunch. Can you answer this one for us? Which is, what do you think would most help make white viable in Commander without breaking the color pie? And that's the tough part. Obviously, rampant card draw, but how do you do it so that it feels white? Because honestly, if you just gave white those two things the same way green has it, then white would be the best color all of a sudden. We just want it to be a good color.
Yeah, and I would love to see, you know, fun creative ideas. It's always cool seeing the things that people come up with, and there's a lot of room here.
All right, and if you want to buy any cool white cards like Smothering Tithe or Teferi's Protection or Sun Titan or Enlightened Tutor.
Technically reprinted, by the way, Teferi's Protection and this new mystery booster thing.
Oh, right, and wasn't there like a Judge promo or something at some point?
Yeah.
I don't know if that, all any of that
I don't
really
think Judge
promos
ever count. Yeah.
Hopefully maybe Commander Legends.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. But if you want to pick up any of that stuff or any other Magic cards, please go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. If you use our affiliate link when you order any of your stuff, you really are supporting this show, Game Nights, Extra Turns, all of our content.
And make sure you also purchase some Ultra Pro product while you're there, or you're at a big box retailer or your LGS. They make amazing play mats. Basically, any single thing that you might need when playing Magic the Gathering, they will have for you. So check it out. They got amazing deck boxes, sleeves, dice, you name it. They got it. Ultra Pro, buying their product also helps us support this show. So thank you.
All right, now it's time for the end step where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic.
Did you watch The Mandalorian?
I haven't watched it yet. I knew we were going to talk about this, though, because I saw that on Twitter that you were talking about it.
I'm not going to lie. I thought the episode, if I had to give the first episode a rating, I would give it like a 6 to 7 out of 10.
It's not bad.
Yeah, because we have the rest of the season to go on to. It's on Disney Plus. It's a new show directed by Jon Favreau, and it follows the story of a Mandalorian, which is the same type of class of bounty hunter that Boba Fett was.
Yeah.
They never take off their helmets, so you basically just watch Boba Fett the entire episode.
Must be tough on the acting, because you don't have any facial expressions.
Yeah, it's the guy from Game of Thrones in there too, you just hear his voice. I thought the episode was actually a lot of fun. The production value is really well done. It's shot beautifully. All of the makeup and the effects look great. And if you're just a fan of Star Wars, it's definitely something that you can really easily dive into. And there's like probably like 15 or 16 Easter eggs in that first episode alone that don't detract from the episode at all. I think Jon Favreau does a really good job in general of paying homage to stuff and making it look and feel correct in the right universe. Like, I think he did that with Iron Man really well. He did that with Jungle Book too. No comment on The Lion King, because that's just a technical mess. I don't know how you even start to direct that movie.
I mean, Jungle Book was similar. That's why I think they thought they could
do
it.
But at least they had a real kid
in there. That's true.
To ground the whole thing. I thought it was a really fun ride at the very least. I'm excited to see where it goes, and it does feel a little bit like hey, you like Star Wars? You're definitely going to like this. Ooh, you're going to like this throwback. You're going to like this. And I'm the kind of person that's just like,
Yeah, I do like Star Wars.
Yeah, I do like Star Wars. And I haven't felt something like this in a while. Please don't disappoint. So that's where I'm at with it right now. I would recommend checking out at least the first episode. I think you can get a free trial as well on Disney Plus for a week or a month if you go to the website.
Yeah, we're actually waiting a little while for the free trial to see once a couple more shows come out. So we can test
a couple. Do a bunch.
We're in this era now where like Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, Apple Plus, it's going to be like, okay, I'm not going to just have them all. I'm going to have to pick and choose. So.
Yeah, it basically costs as much as my cable did back in the day now. Yeah,
I remember when, like DirecTV, it was like, $100+ for all the channels. And now you're just kind of, they're going to get that money out of you somehow, I guess is how it's going to work.
Good
thing about YouTube is it's free.
Well, I'm pretty sure if you ever want to watch Mulan on the streaming service, it'll have to be Disney Plus.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that's true. They're still going to.
Who knows?
I bet they're still going to put their stuff on HBO and stuff. They'll just take the money.
I have no idea how it works. I hope everyone's able to watch it.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance they will. I mean, we have no idea for sure. Okay. cool end step. I will check that out. Another cool show. Did you see I set up my own segue?
That was dope. That was cool.
So pro.
It's like you're playing T-ball.
Let me put that here.
Wow, what a great pitch.
The worst part was I did that without thinking about it, then realized I did it and was like, that was lame.
Nice.
Something that's not lame, though.
There we go. Double.
This is our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman, they talk about the modern format, all things competitive Magic. I think last week, at the time you're watching this, they actually had a topic about how to fix white in modern. So I noticed that as we went to record today. I was like, oh, we're doing sort of that topic. So that was not planned, but great minds. Yeah. So you can find them on Twitter at the MMcast. You can find them on YouTube. Just type in Masters of Modern, or they'll show up in any of your podcast apps.
And everyone here at the Command Zone House, we have Terry Robertson, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Ashlyn Rose, Craig Blanchett, Sam Waldo, Alfred Destaca. Thank you to everyone for helping make this show possible, as well as the, you know, we just put on an amazing Brian Sanderson episode that's been cooking in the edit bay for, I don't know, almost half a year now or something. And we have a really fun one coming up as well for the holiday season.
So. Oh, yeah. That one's going to be fun, too. Yeah. Yeah. The Brandon episode we shot back in, was it March?
Yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah. That one, it was just came to us suddenly because Brandon became available and we were like, I don't know where we're going to release this, but let's shoot it.
Yeah. Immediately. And of course, big thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for doing the living card animations that live behind us on set, as well as start and end the show at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. You can find them on Twitter at livingcardsmtg.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
And thanks for the questions. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.